Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Par None Podcast. I am your host, Ryan Hernandez, and we have our other host as well, PJR. Before we get started, one, we just want to say thank you to everybody who's listened so far. If you are enjoying what you're hearing, please like, comment, subscribe on our YouTube, find us on Apple or Spotify, follow the show, give us a five-star rating, leave a review. That helps get us out there. I know every podcast and video you listen to says this, but it really is how we kind of get in front of other people who may be looking for golf content. So please share us, please like, please comment, please engage. We try to engage back as much as we possibly can. We both have our own brands and the shared brand as well, so we're trying our best to learn how to kind of integrate all of those things as we go. And the other big thing is this is our seventh episode, which may not mean a lot to a lot of people, but something like 80 to 85% of podcasts don't make it to seven episodes or past seven episodes. So it's a pretty big milestone for us as far as the podcasts goes. We have no plans of stopping. Yeah, but we're just really, really thrilled that we've kind of hit that threshold, that you've been here for it, and here's to obviously many, many more. But just want to get those things out of the way early. So, PGR, great to be with you again. How's your week been? I know you took a fun little mini trip to Sin City. How was that? You don't have to give us any details, but...
No, I'm leaving this. I'm not bringing up details from the trip at all. But yes, no, I spent about a day... Two full days in Vegas. It was so much fun. I didn't golf at all. This was a pure vacation. Every trip I've gone on this year, as much as it was vacation and fun, they were very work focused. I was, you know, demoing golf clubs, meeting with brand reps, doing all that stuff, which I love doing. It is work, but I don't consider it really work kind of thing. But this is the first weekend where I really got away. Didn't have to play golf. I was with my wife, my dad, and his partner. She's awesome. And we just had a really, really good time. We saw Tesla in concert. If you're any classic rock fans out there, that was awesome. It's my second time seeing them. It was wonderful. We saw the Michael Jackson One show. That was super cool. Like the hologram of Michael Jackson.
It was really
sad to watch. Like it was heartbreaking, to be honest with you, because you know, you're seeing these old videos of him and the hologram. I think there's a lot of controversy that goes around the guy, and you know, I'm not going to get into that really, but he was such a talented individual, and just being able to kind of see just a glimpse of it was just amazing. And it was almost heartbreaking. Like, I kind of need to watch it. I want to go do it again because you're really wrapped up in the emotion of all of it too. And the show was phenomenal. Mm. Like it was, they had people coming out from the ceiling and lights and stuff and people bouncing off the walls, like climbing up the wall. It was amazing. It was absolutely fantastic. So Vegas is great. I can't wait to go back. You know, a little gambling, a couple shows, a lot of alcohol consumption, but you know, it's Vegas, you know, come on. I love espresso martinis, and that is my new thing from here on out. So Masters weekend, I will be drinking espresso martinis.
A little downer mixed together. Gotta love that.
It's the best breakfast drink because you wake up and you're hurting. But you need to wake up. So you get both of those and you hit the ground. You pick up where you left off the night before, which is maybe not the best thing. But hey, but I will say this. The first day there, I walked almost 28,000 steps.
Yeesh.
That's almost 14 miles of walking.
That'll work.
Yeah.
Burned it off some. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't feel bad about it. Oh, just a little. I just got to go through all the water weight that I gained because my body's retaining a lot right now.
You'll work through that.
So yeah, it was a great weekend. It was a great weekend. I didn't get to watch as much of the Valspar as I liked. I was trying to peek in at the casinos because people were gambling on it. So I was like, ooh, Valspar. Right. I watched a little bit of it on my phone. I really wanted Spieth to win it. Man, I thought he had it. Apparently he blew it with a bad drive. And you know what? He gets a lot of crap for this. And this is where I'm going to start and I'm going to die on this hill a little bit. So you had Taylor Moore who won it. And rightfully so, he's the one golfer that did not fall apart down the stretch. Now, a lot of people have come after Spieth in the past. like, oh, he falls apart. He does this. He does that. I'm like, okay, let's get something really clear here. Nothing against Taylor Moore or any golfer that's just on for 4 days and wins a golf tournament. That's good work. You peaked at the right time, all those things. But the difference between Spieth and all these other guys is he doesn't need his best game to win. I don't know if you remember that British Open where he fanned went like 3 miles right.
Sure.
And I think he was going against Matt Kuchar. I broke my heart because I love Kuchar and I wanted him to win that. But it's just one of those things, like, what makes a great elite level golfer so amazing is winning when you don't have your best stuff. Being able to contend when you don't have your best stuff. If your only way of winning is by hitting every fairway, every green, and putting lights out, that is not sustainable golf. A good golfer, look at Tiger. I mean, look at all these amazing golfers who have hit terrible shots and saved themselves from them and were able to compete and win at that. Like, that's what makes Spieth so great. So, yeah, he lost his tournament. I love him for the Masters. Even in his slump, he competed at the Masters. You know what I mean? He overcame his fear, the par 3, too, which is awesome. And I saw something really funny, like the last three rounds he's finished, like on Easter Sunday or something like that, or last he's won. And apparently the Masters ends like on Easter Sunday. So like, oh, well, history repeats itself. Spieth is going to be in contention or winning the Masters. Like, I know golf doesn't work that way, but wouldn't that be freaking cool? Like,
for sure.
No, so, it was sad. It was sad that Spieth fell apart, but he's going to be fine. He's come such a long way. He plays Augusta well. He's a great match play golfer. So I can't wait to see him this upcoming week. So I'll be able to sit down and watch golf all weekend. I like him. I mean, the dude, leave him alone. Like, and it's always people that can barely break 80 that have so much to say about the person that choked on the 16th hole in a professional golf tournament. Like, dude, you sweat over a 3-foot putt for $5, or I don't want to hear it. Like,
that's so funny. Yeah. No, I agree. I think that Spieth gets just an abnormally large amount of just like hate for no reason. I don't know if you saw just kind of talking about that Shank who finished second. I don't know if you saw the last hole where he hit up against the tree and then had to go like left-handed, which was wild because I don't know if you saw that clip. I didn't see it live, but I saw like a clip afterwards of like kind of the caddy was in there debating of like, do you take the drop? Like, do you take a penalty? And then try to make five from there and see what happens instead of hitting that shot out of that tree left-handed. I just thought it was an interesting debate. I'd love to get your take on it because I don't think – like in that moment, you're trying to win, and you definitely don't win if you kind of concede that like penalty drop shot, like if you take an unplayable. But at the same time, if you're going to go for the hero shot, he could have, you know, you could be staring 7 or 8 in the face if you whiff or hit the tree first or hit yourself first or anything like that. So I thought it was an interesting debate. I don't think he made the wrong decision by trying to punch it out left. Unfortunately, it cost him the win by one stroke going up against that tree. But I just thought it was an interesting debate because, you know, those kinds of things are always interesting.
Yeah, so this is where I stand on the whole thing. One, they know how to hit that shot left-handed. They practice. Hell, I even practiced that shot. I had to use it in Arizona, and it was my dad looked at me and was like, I can't believe you did that. I'm like, believe it or not, when I sit in my basement, I have an 8-iron in my hand, I flip it around left-handed, and I just hit little chip shots with it because you need it more times than you care to admit. Let's put it that way. That situation reminds me a lot of Charlie Hoffman. I don't remember, it was like 3-4 years ago maybe. Dude was coming in second in like every single tournament. He's like on hole 17, I think water in front of the green or something like that. And it's a par 5. And you could hear him and the caddy talking. And the caddy's like, okay, what you need to do, you need to lay up, do this. And he's like, no, I'm not laying up. He's like, I am tired of coming in second place. He's like, I want to win. He's like, if I want to win, I have to go for it. I have to hit this shot. And so, you know, Adam Shanks had a great career in the PGA Tour. He hasn't won yet, which breaks my heart because I love the guy. Don't get me wrong. Having a name like Shank, you've already overcome a lot in golf.
Yeah, worst but, name ever.
You know, the worst golf name you could possibly have. Like, nobody even likes whispering that word. But you come top 5, top 10, second place so many times, you want to win. I mean, worst case scenario for the guy, he gets a fat payday, and he's still going to make it into other events. You know what I mean? So, and if you hit the shot and you pull it off, well, you're a freaking legend then. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's not like his golf career depended on that singular shot. Mm-hmm. I think it comes back to down to these guys want to win. And that's, you know, I think if it was his first time ever in contention in a tournament, or he was new on tour, maybe it's a little bit of a different argument, but this guy has been up there time and time again. And I just think he got to the point where he's like, no, I want to win. I'm ready to win a golf tournament. So you can't fault him for that decision. You know what I mean? He's still going to have a great career. He's still eligible. He still has his eligibility for years to come. Why not? Like, what would you think? If you don't have your eligibility, you're not, or any of these things, then you probably don't take the shot. You take the safe shot. You get a safe third, fourth place finish, whatever it might be. Maybe get pushed into a playoff. And that's great for someone that just got on tour or is trying to get in other tournaments or maintain or sustain their card. Somebody that's been at the edge of the cliff so many times, he's like, no, I'm ready to jump. Let's do this, you know? So I'm not going to fault him on that at all. At least that's my perspective on it.
No, I totally agree. I think one of the interesting arguments I heard, and again, I don't know Adam Shank's financial situation or anything like that. I mean, like you said, I know he's had a pretty lucrative career. I think he has like 10 top 10 finishes, a third place, a second place.
The final but, you know, I think there
was too. Yeah, there was an interesting argument to be made about just like how much money do you want to make? Do you know, like if you drop 2-3 shots, you know, those are $100,000 shots or more.
Yeah.
So I think that was an interesting argument to make being, and again, I don't know if any pro golfer goes into even hitting that shot being like, I know I'm not going to win regardless. But I just thought, it was an interesting take. I mean, for somebody who's never played golf or had hundreds of thousands of dollars riding on a shot, it is an interesting thought to me to be like, hey, if you play the safe shot, you may make $800,000, but hitting the shot, you're risking losing $500,000 or something like that. Just thought it was an interesting argument. I don't think he made the wrong choice. I think hitting that left-handed punch shot out of there was probably the right call. Because I don't think he takes that drop and has a shot from 165, 75 yards to the stick that he sticks there. So I just thought it was an interesting thing.
Well, it also comes down to, I mean, this kind of bleeds into the live thing a little bit. Why are you playing golf? Are you playing golf because you want to make that extra $500,000? Or are you playing golf because you want to win tournaments and you want to carve your name into the earth? You know, and that to me, that argument right there just proves to me that he's playing golf for the right reasons and that he's out there because he wants to win and because he wants to be a competitive force on the PGA Tour. That is awesome. That is why I watch golf. I'm not watching golf because you made $500,000 extra because you took a drop or you did this or you did that. I applaud you for taking the chance and trusting your game enough to go, I can get this done, and you're going for the W. That to me is bigger than any paycheck out there. You know what I mean? And the guy, I'm assuming, is doing perfectly well financially. And also keep in mind, these events now are paying out a lot more money than they were three or 4 years ago. So guess what? You can hit that hero shot and you're going to make more than you did last year if you were in that position.
Yeah.
So, okay, I'm saying you only made $300,000 instead of $800,000. That's more than what like 90% of people make in a year here in the United States. So, if you can't manage that money, if you make $300,000 in a golf tournament and you can't manage that, then you have bigger issues than the golf choice, the choice you just made on the shot that you chose to take. Words are hard.
You bring up an interesting point. Is the hero shot always the right shot to hit?
No, I think it's incredibly circumstantial. Like I kind of said, like if you are looking for your first top five on the PGA Tour, probably don't go for the hero shot. You know what I mean? Or if you need to get a 5 or 6 to save your card, don't take the – or to save your PGA Tour card, don't take the hero shot. But for him, someone in his situation and the amount of times he's been in contention and top tens and all that, it was absolutely the right choice for him. Mm. Yeah. Now, if he was like 100 yards out, you get a wedge in one of these guys' hands is a totally different conversation.
Mm.
You know, but you're talking 9-iron, 8-iron, maybe depending on the wind, soft 7 or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's a – you know, I mean, they're good, but I think if he could have taken the drop and hit a 110-yard shot, take the drop. Mm. Absolutely. But that wasn't the situation here. You know what I mean? So no, not always a hero shot. I think it depends on the player and your history and what you're trying to achieve. But for someone like him, absolutely. I think it was the right choice.
Fair enough. No, I totally agree. Totally agree. I don't know if you saw that crazy stat. Taylor Moore was like, what is it? Like 64 of 64 inside of 7 feet this week.
That is awesome. I love it when they're putting that good.
Crazy.
That's like scary good. Could you imagine making 64 putts in a PGA event inside of 7 feet and not missing? That is insane.
No, especially like the PGA Tour average is like 55% from 7 feet. So it's just like the law says that you can't make all of those. Now, you know, granted, some of them are probably like, but even still, like there had to be what? 10 to 20 putts where it's just like, man, you just have to be swinging it hot, because in every other week, there's at least one or two not going in. And that would have been the difference between first and third place. So it's just wild that he was perfect from that distance. I remember, you know, like Tiger bringing up those kinds of numbers where it was just, you know, like he missed three of like 170 from a certain distance or something silly.
Yeah, no. And it's crazy because the stats for golfers, once you go from like 3 feet to like 5 to 7 feet, how quickly the percentage drops. And this is something that amateur golfers need to be aware of. Because we all get frustrated when we miss that 5 foot putt, miss that 7 foot, 8 foot, nine, or anything inside, anything between probably like 4 and 10 feet. Statistically, the pros don't make as many of those as you think they do. You're watching them on TV and they're showing all the putts go in, so you just assume that they're making all of them. But it's only something like you said, like 55%. That means one out of every two putts. And these are professional golfers. They putt for hours every single day. You're some guy that plays once a week and never practices. You can't get mad when you're not making these putts. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, like, I think golfers have unreal expectations, but they also see the guys on TV do it. It's an interesting conversation, to say the least.
Yeah. I think TV golf has kind of, like, ruined people's expectations.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. And I mean, I know, like, for me, before I understood those stats, like, I thought they made a lot more putts. And, you know, it's just like, well, TV is going to show the guys playing well that week. So you are always seeing good golf, but it's not always the same guys playing good golf. But the TV doesn't want to show somebody going out there to shoot, like, an 82 who can't, like, get the ball in the hole.
Why would you want to watch somebody not make putts and missing fairways and everything like that? Like, I'll play with my dad's buddy. I'm not going to name his name, but if he listens, he knows who he is.
Yeah, or just play with me. Same difference.
We'll get better than that. Well, speaking of this, though, difference between TV and amateur golfers and real golfers, what are your thoughts on the possibility of them reeling back the golf ball? This is a fun one.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, you're like probably the fifth or sixth person that's asked me this since like the weekend, and I don't know if I have a good answer. I've been thinking about it. I know this is going to be like such a politically correct thing to say, but there's two sides to every coin. I thought like Justin Thomas brought up a really good point of like, why are people who are 15 handicaps making the rules for these really good golfers? And I thought that was a really, really good point to me of why are these people making that rule? On the other side of it, these guys are doing like just atrocious astronomical things to the golf ball nowadays. And I wonder, you know, if you don't put some sort of governor on things, like, where do you draw the line? Like, are you going to make a ball that goes 400 yards? You're going to make a ball that goes 450 yards? You know what I mean? And I just like...
See, I don't think it'll get to that point. Where I kind of stand on this is I think it's an atrocious idea. And there's a bunch of different reasons for it. So first off, you know, this is the one sport where we can say that we play the same equipment as the pros do. That's a really cool feeling. You know what I mean? So there's that. Two, if you want to stop what's happening with the golf ball, then okay, where you're at now is the line. Mm. Don't go backwards. This is the line right here. This is the line. We can't go any further than where we are right now. I think that is the most middle of the road solution to it. But also, from a, okay, so golf right now is in the best place it has arguably ever been.
Yeah.
Why are you going to do, and this is the USGA saying, this is the PGA Tour saying this. Why are you going to do something that is going to hinder that? Nobody wants to, I mean, I'm not saying nobody. People show up because they want to see Rory fly 1-320.
Yeah.
You're going to reel him back to 280, 290. Golf is not as impressive anymore. I mean, it's still impressive. It's still going, I mean, I still find it impressive. But the average viewer isn't, they're not tuning in for that. You know what I mean? They just aren't. So I don't like it. I don't agree with it. I mean, every golf ball manufacturer has come out or every club manufacturer that makes golf balls has come out and said, no, this is a terrible idea. Like, why would you do this? And to me, it seems like everybody in the USGA has a history of just being completely selfish and not giving a shit about anybody else other than their own club for whatever reason. I'll never understand that either. But lost my train of thought there. There's just absolutely no reason for this. You know what I mean? I don't know. And also the scoring average has not really changed in the last 10 years or something like that. Driving average has gone up, but the scores haven't changed. And also Augusta has done some stuff to their golf courses. It's a simple solution. And everyone's like, it's so expensive. It's this and this and that. I'm like, just shut up. Golf has an endless amount of money. They can do whatever they want. Make it hard for them. You drop that fairway off at 280. You give them some rough. And then the fairway picks back up at 330. And you make that rough thick. You make the fairways more narrow. You put more bunkers out there. There are plenty of ways you can make these guys take a step back rather than reeling back the golf ball. You know what I mean? And, yeah. And these people don't, like JT said, like these are 15 handicapped golfers dictating the rules of golf. Every professional golfer has basically come out and said no. Every golf ball manufacturer has said no. The fans have come out and pretty much said no. So what's the USGA going to do here? Are they going to listen to their fans, the players, the manufacturers, which, by the way, give a whole lot of money to the PGA Tour, sponsor events, and do all these things? They're going to sit there and just flick them all off and go, no, we're going to reel back the golf ball because you're hitting it too long. And then you're going to piss off everybody. You're probably going to lose some fans. You're going to lose some viewers. You're going to piss off the people on tour. And with everything going on in LIV right now, why would you do anything at all to piss off the players on the PGA Tour? Yeah. Why?
Yeah.
That is not incentivize them to stay at all. You know what I mean? And then say LIV isn't allowed to do the PGA Tour things. Well, LIV is its own tour. They can adopt whatever rules they want if they can't get in on it. So now LIV can go play these golf balls, but say LIV can play them, but the PGA Tour can't. Well, all of a sudden you just gave more power over to LIV.
Yeah.
So I don't see any way this benefits anybody other than the USGA crew, which I don't understand how this actually benefits them because I see them losing money. So, yeah. And losing fans and losing, you know, respect and all of these things. So I think all in all, it is a terrible decision. The best thing to do, draw the line in the sand going forward. Don't go backwards. Make the golf courses tougher. I love one of my favorite tournaments, and I love it when the pros complain when they do these US Opens that are just vicious.
Yeah.
I mean, just vicious setups. Because you get to see them be human. You get to see them struggle. And I like seeing the pros struggle because it shows them that they're human, that there are things that even they can't overcome. You know what I mean? Like, I love seeing them struggle. Make those fairways firm and hard, the rough, thick. Add some bunkers. Make those greens fast. That's going to lower scores quick, or higher scores quicker.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You don't need to do anything with the golf ball. You don't have to do anything with the golf ball. There's so many other solutions to this problem other than the freaking golf ball. Right. Like, it just makes no sense to me.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. I just wonder, and I haven't read too in depth about it. I wonder what's their reasoning for it? Like, why did they all of a sudden decide that it needed to happen?
Is it getting out of hand?
Yeah.
It's just getting out of hand for them. What they're going to start doing is with the robot testing that they do is they're going to test it at, it was originally, I think 123 miles an hour for a golf swing. Now they're going to pump up that up to 127 miles an hour, which is 0.01% of the PGA Tour can even get those numbers. And they're going to base it off of that alone there. You know what I mean? All that 0.01%. Also, if you've put it, golf is an athletic sport now. It never used to be. And maybe this is what these old guys have a problem with. These guys aren't hitting the golf ball further necessarily because of just the golf ball. They're in the gym 5 days a week. They're doing strength training, mobility training, agility training, speed training. They're doing all these things. If you can hit the golf ball with a swing speed of 127 miles an hour and keep it in play, why would you handicap that guy? That's that is an unreal thing to do. So you're going to take away some of the best phenoms in sports, some of the longest hitters that are so gifted and so hardworking, and you're going to handicap them because you're mad they hit it too far, and you're blaming the golf ball for it? Like, and you know what? I really do hope I don't want them to change the rules, but if they do change the rules, I really hope these golfers find a way to freaking hack it. I hope they find a way to still pummel at 320. Yeah. I hope something happens with the driver. There will be ways around it. I hope if the USGA does it, I hope they choke on it. I hope they do. I do not wish them well on this one.
Well, and I think, you know, one thing that isn't getting talked about, and at least I haven't read a ton about it, is you're really penalizing the shorter hitters than you are the longer hitters.
Oh, absolutely. Because,
like, you know, Rory can still hit it out. 290, yeah, and 290 is playable. But like you said, Zach Johnson, Kevin Kisner, some of these shorter hitters, like, they don't stand a chance if their ball's going to go now 240 instead of 255 or 250 instead of 275. Like, you're almost just – I mean, like, you're basically playing those guys out of the tour. And I remember when I was a baseball coach, they did the same thing. Like, we used to have a certain metal bat called BESR certified. Well, then they made it a different thing to BB Core. Basically, they deadened the bat because it was getting too hot off the bat. And everybody was like, oh, this, you know, like, so home runs were down and all this kinds of stuff. Well, then a couple years later, especially at the college level, they decided to deaden the ball. And it was the most boring College World Series you've ever seen. There was just, like, there was no home runs. It was just, you know, fly balls, low scores. And it was just, it was boring to watch, you know. And I mean, like, somebody like me who can appreciate the intricacies of baseball, much like we appreciate the intricacies of golf, will still find it fascinating to, regardless of what they do. But I do remember just, like, that specific baseball instance where it's like, man, once they deadened the ball, it was so bad that they had to run it back and knock it off, because it was just like, nobody wants to watch this. Nobody wants to play it like this. Like, everybody's bored. And that's, like, my biggest fear of what's going to happen is just, like, you were saying, just, like, this is going to be boring to watch, and nobody's going, you know, like, golf is going to take a step backwards as far as, like, growing the game and trying to get people, you know, interested. You're going to roll that back.
Also, for example, someone like me who wants to play at amateur events and try qualifying for US Opens, and I have a 3 to 5 year plan for my own personal golf journey and career, what do I do? Do I have to go out and buy these golf balls the tour pros play and then handicap myself in these tournaments?
Yeah.
And then, okay, so then or not. Or do I get to play the golf ball that I'm playing now? And then when I have to go qualify for the events, I have to go play the handicap golf ball that I don't typically play. So where's that line going to be? You know what I mean? So am I going to be putting myself at a disadvantage in qualifying rounds and in amateur events? And that's going to take me, it's going to make it much harder because I rely on my distance a good amount. I mean, I don't hit it 320. I mean, I don't fly at 327. I can hit it very far if I need to. But so am I going to be handicapped myself in the amateur events and then hoping that I can beat the guys playing the real golf, the other golf ball? Like, there's no smooth way of doing this, in my opinion. You know what I mean? Like, I don't see how this works. And also, like I said, I like knowing that I can go to, like, right now I'm going to be playing almost the exact same bag as John Rahm, exact same golf ball as him. And that's cool because I can go to St. Andrews and I can play St. Andrews using the exact same stuff that John Rahm played. And I can stack myself up against him. You know what I mean? I mean, clearly he's better. He's going to beat me. That's not what I'm getting at here.
Right.
But, like, I use my metrics. I will look at PGA Tour numbers, their stats, their yardages, and that's how I compare myself. Where am I at in my game? Do I need a few more yards? Do I need to hit more greens? Like, I like seeing their stats. So now I'm not going to be able to properly assess my own golf game going forward because they might be using a different golf ball than me. Like, well, am I really? It's just messy. Sure. This whole thing is just messy. So going backwards is not the solution. You want to draw a line in the sand going forward? Fine. Get that. I will make that compromise, but reeling it back is just going to cause, I think if they were to do it 10 years ago, a better argument, but you're talking about reeling the golf ball back to where it was in the 90s. That's like a 25 to 30 yard reel on the golf ball.
Yeah.
That's no good. Now, on an interesting note, what I would love to see them do for one tournament a year, just for shits and grins here, I want one event where they play Persimmon Woods, old blades, and old technology and old golf balls.
Yeah.
That would be fun. I would love to see that and experience that, but I don't want that to be the norm. You know what I mean? Fans like seeing them bomb the ball. They do. They love seeing high towering shots. They love seeing crazy shit out there. You're taking that away. You're taking away entertainment. Golf is in a very entertainment play. We have full swing. We have all this stuff going on. So why are you going to take away arguably the biggest source of their entertainment? And nobody wants it. Right. Nobody is on board for this at all. Titleist has come out. TaylorMade's come out. I don't know if Callaway's made a statement or not yet. I don't think they have, or if they have, I haven't seen it. Everyone is basically saying, no, this is stupid. Stop. Like, you know, so if the USGA goes through with it, it just shows either, and I'm a golfer, I love the PGA Tour, it just shows their lack of respect for the people that support them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a slap in the face of the manufacturer, slap in the face of the players, a slap in the face of the fans, everyone.
Right. I wonder, I don't know the answer to this question. You know, I know sometimes, like, for instance, the U.S. Open is run by the USGA, but the other events are not run through them, though we follow the rules of golf. Will they be able, pros be able to, like, is it going to be a thing where it's like they have to play this ball in every event? Or is it just like, hey, when you get to the U.S. Open, you're going to have to play a crappy golf ball, but the rest of the time, since you're on the tour and the tour isn't technically owned by the USGA, it can't enforce that golf ball rule?
I think it's going to be an all or nothing kind of thing. Okay. I couldn't imagine being a golfer having to change the golf ball because I'm playing a certain event.
Yeah.
That would be so damn frustrating. It's like, oh, this week I get to play this golf ball. The next week, we're so feel-based. We're so consistent. We take out all the moving parts and all the variables. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's why they say practice with the golf balls that you play and all these things. Like, there's too many moving parts for these guys, in my opinion. So, I mean, if they're going to do it, just do it across the board. Don't make it even more confusing than it already is. Yeah, I don't see a benefit to doing it that way. You know what I mean? Right. I don't know what they're actually going to do, but I don't see the benefit of that. I couldn't imagine playing one golf ball for 12 events and then a different golf ball for 4 events. Like, no, not at all.
No, that would be terrible. I was just curious.
That's right up the alley of how stupid the USGA is, and I wouldn't be surprised if they pulled some crap like that.
Yeah, me neither. But I was just, I was just interested in that.
Yeah, no, I have no idea. What I have opinions. I have a lot of them.
Sure. The USGA is getting as bad as Liv, almost.
Hell, they can go over to Liv then. We need a new committee.
Oh, dear. Can you imagine if the USGA and Liv partnered, like, Saint broke off from the PGA Tour? Wow.
That'd be a nightmare for Liv, I think, to be honest with you. Speaking of Liv, worst ratings yet. Ha, ha, ha.
So bad. I didn't even know they were playing this week. I had no idea.
It was awful. It was worse than the last event, and I think it's like the worst event out of like the last 3 or 4, which they had some of them on YouTube. So, yeah, way to get them. And it brings up an interesting conversation, something I brought up to you earlier. Are these guys worth the money?
Yeah.
Look at all the millions and or billions of dollars you are spending on this.
Yeah.
Your ratings are worse than America's Funniest Animals.
Right.
You're paying Phil Mickelson upwards of like $200 million to shoot 74-75. You know what I mean? Cameron Smith, who was like, we have Cameron Smith. He's the greatest golfer in the world. He won one event. Yeah. And I think he's placed better than 17th since then. Kepka has not been performing. DJ gets a free pass because he tore it up last year, but he's DJ, so he just does shit like that.
Yeah.
Is this worth the money? You guys spent millions or billions of dollars on this stuff, and these star players, you have the best players in the world. It's going to be so interesting. They're not even breaking par, man. Like, Bryson has barely shown up for any of it. You know what I mean? Like, it is a complete shit show. Like, it is terrible. You're spending a lot of money. You're not getting TV ratings. Your top players aren't even placing inside the top. It's a 48-man field with no cut, and you can't even finish better than 17th place. Yeah. And you're touting around like, oh, why can't we play in the Ryder Cup? I'm sorry. I don't think we want you. Like you're playing no-cut events with 48-man fields, and you can't place top better than 17th, and you're upset because you're not in consideration for the Ryder Cup? Well, I don't think you would be anyway. So,
right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think one of the most disappointing, I mean, not that I wasn't already disappointed with Liv. You know, I will say there was a time there where I was like kind of interested in it, if I'm honest. And I just wanted to see, like, what's going to happen? Like, is this going to kind of supplant or like at least make a name for itself in the conversation? And I'm looking at the leaderboard right now and I'm just like, this is a boring PGA Tour leaderboard. Like, Danny Lee wins, which no, you know, like no offense to Danny Lee, but nobody's buying a ticket to watch Danny Lee play golf.
Well, after he six-putted on from like 3 feet a couple years ago, yeah.
Yeah. Carlos Ortiz second, Brandon Steele third, Louis Oosthuizen in fourth, Charles Howell the third, fifth, Pereira sixth, Jones seventh, Kevin Na eighth, Sergio ninth, Peter Uihlein 10th. I mean, like Brandon Gray, like Matthew Wolf is like, you know, the biggest young stud. And he's 12th. Then Dustin Johnson, 13th. Taylor Gooch, 14th. I mean, these young guys that were like were the big deals, like you're saying, it's just like they're not doing anything. I mean, Brooks Koepka finished 29th. Harold Varner finished 27th. Cam Smith, 26th. Mickelson, 32nd. I mean, it's just not, you know, like you said, DeChambeau was 7 over par, almost dead last.
That's rough. So it'd be interesting, like, if they were all duking it out. If all these top guys were duking it out for that number one spot week in, week out.
Right.
That's interesting.
That's what I'm saying.
That's not happening here.
Right. At all. No. I would be, I mean, I would probably watch it if like week after week it was like, you know, hey, Cameron Smith and Dustin Johnson and even like, you know, I mean, like, I would love to see Phil play good golf. Like, it makes it interesting.
DJ and Brooksy, you know, like, in the final group going toe-to-toe. Right. Sign me up. I'll watch that all day.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. It's just like – I think we talked about it maybe – I can't remember if it was last episode or two episodes ago. It's just like – it's become more of a – like a glorified – I think we said like a glorified charity tournament. It's just
– it's a joke now. It's honestly turning into something – like, we kind of mocked it at first, and I've mocked it pretty much from day one because I don't agree with why they're doing it, and I don't buy into their bullshit, and they're all, oh, we're trying to change the – it is the most self-serving thing I've ever seen in my life, and you're disguising it as altruism. You're all selfish individuals. I mean, I don't care what anyone has to say when it comes to that. But it's a joke now. Like, it's actually a joke. Like, it's to the point where I won't even say I find it funny. It's just like, wow, this is embarrassing, guys. Like, what are you guys going to do next? I mean, what are you going to do next year? Like, you're not growing. You're going backwards. And you're not incentivizing anybody to join the tour at this point either. Like, it might drown. There's a good chance it might drown. This could be a five-year fad and then done. And I hope to God the PGA Tour makes these guys go through the Korn Ferry and Q School all over again and just puts them through the ringer. I hope they do. Don't feel bad for them.
Yeah. I mean, I find it really hard to find – yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things. I mean, I just don't, you know, like, you know, I think we're running out of things to almost say about it because it's just so like ridiculous. I mean, the Saudis have a ton of money, so that's not the issue. They can keep it alive for a while for sure. I think it's going to be really interesting once these guys' contracts are up, what they do and then what ends up happening. I will say, not even to defend them, just from like a golf sake. And again, I don't know how – let me restart. I think that these guys are not taking golf as seriously now, so I don't even know how good they would be if they came back to the tour. Because if Bryson can't shoot seven – is Bryson shooting seven over at this event, like, you know, is he going to be – is he going to do anything at like the Valspar or the match play anyway? So, you know, that aside though – I do wonder, you know, like if I know that the PGA Tour talks a strong game. I'm just curious if they walk the walk when it comes time, if it ever comes time, when like a faction of the Liv guys that are still relevant, maybe like a Brooks or a Cam Smith or a Joaquin Neiman, you know, they team up and are like, we want to come back and, you know, people still want to see those guys. Are they really going to say no? I mean, I'm not saying they won't. I'm just saying it'll be an interesting thing when or if that happens, if there's this small group or faction of people who want to come back and it's the fans want them back or something like that. I wonder what'll happen. I don't know.
It might be like a death to Liv thing. Like, okay, well, we will only take back the players if Liv decides to concede and give up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't see that happening. Like, I don't know where this is going to go. And to me, it's just, you know, and they keep blaming the PGA Tour. They blame this. They blame them. Like, at this point, you guys are just playing awful golf. Like, you have no leg to stand on here. None. You have no argument possibly left for this. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, I don't know. It's ridiculous.
I agree.
But speaking of something more positive here, did you hear about the Lynn Grant, the DP World Tour event?
Yes.
How cool is that? So I'm going to read something real quick. History was made in Sweden on Sunday as Lynn Grant thrilled her home fans by becoming the first woman to win a DP World Tour event. The Scandinavian mixed event was set up to allow men and women to compete on equal footing, with the tournament co-sanctioned by the DP World Tour and the Ladies European Tour. And a woman won it. That is awesome.
Yeah,
that is great for golf. That situation does good things for golf. That is a positive force in golf. Mm-hmm. 110. I know the PGA Tour is doing something similar next year as well. I'm excited for it. I love the LPGA Tour. I watch it. I follow it.
Yeah.
Co-sanctioning these events and lifting them up, I think, is amazing. That is what she just did in this one singular weekend is more impressive than Liv has done in a year and a half.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. Kind of to keep Liv in the mix of this conversation, I did hear this weekend that Liv's next big push is going to be a female side of things, which is drawing.
That is not going to work.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I tend to agree and disagree with you, and here's why. I think that a lot of the women will be, you know, very altruistic like the men and say, like, I'm here for these reasons. Having said that, like, if Liv is going to offer the same amount of money to the women make so much less money on the LPGA Tour than the men do. Like, it's going to be really hard to turn down some of that, I think, for some of them, as we saw. I don't know. I'm just saying it'll be an interesting thing if they announce it and then are like, here's buckets of money that you can't win on the, you know, I mean, Rom can still win $10 million. Yeah, the women can't win that. And I get why, but I'm just saying I think it'll be interesting if they do go that route.
So a couple things here. If Liv's men tour isn't working, a woman's tour is simply not going to work. And I don't want this to come off the wrong way here. Not as many people tune in for LPGA Tour as they do the PGA Tour. That is what it is. You know what I mean? And if something against the women, because I watch the LPGA Tour, I absolutely love them. Borderline obsessed with like more than too many women on the LPGA Tour. Not like in an inappropriate way, but like these girls have so much game. It's stupid. Nelly Korda is amazing. Oh my gosh. I love Daniel Kang. Love them all. I love it. It's such a competitive place and you never know who's going to win. You have Rose Zane coming up. There's so many freaking talented girls coming up. Couple things. The purses on the LPGA Tour are growing exponentially. Like hella fast. They're getting more and more money every year. They're getting more and more sponsors every year. They're doing a co-sanctioned event with the PGA Tour next year. LPGA is on a great trajectory right now that I think it'd be foolish to walk away and see how that's going to pan out first. And like I said earlier, if Liv Golf with all men isn't going to work, there's no way in hell it's going to work for women. Nobody's going to tune in for that. People barely tune in for the LPGA as it is now. Mm. So you're going to take a handful of names there that most people don't know who they are, and you're going to have them play for a whole bunch of money, like Liv. I don't understand. Like, if Liv right now isn't making money, how is spending more money and trying to take over the LPGA going to pan out for you?
Right.
You know what I mean? It just doesn't make sense to me. You know what I mean? Do I think the women need to make more money? Absolutely, and they are. And this is what it comes down to women's sports in general. They don't make as much as men, and it is wrong. But the reason being for it, and Ronda Rousey, this is kind of way off topic, but on topic at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, they were asking her about like, oh, well, why don't, you know, women make more as much as men? They were trying to corner into this argument. And she goes, we don't fill the stands. If we don't fill the stands, we don't get the brand sponsorships. We don't get the sponsorships. We don't get as much money as everyone else does. You know what I mean? That is why they don't make as much money. And the reason why the LPGA is making more money now is because they're starting to get more viewers and are getting the sponsors and are getting the partnerships. And that is what drives more money. Now, do I think there's an incredibly big divide between the people that are running this and the girls that are making money? Absolutely. They're probably hosing them. But they're probably hosing everyone, though. You know what I mean? Sure. They can just hose. The men can make more money getting hosed because more people pay attention and tune in for it. You know what I mean? But nobody's going to watch a LIV female. Nobody's watching LIV golf with DJ. And these are household names. These are big names in golf. Major winners. Historic golfers. Phil freaking Mickelson is there. They paid him $200 million to be there. And no one is watching it. So you're going to grab a handful of no-name women, make a women's LIV tour. And also, from a political standpoint here, if you're a woman, how on earth could you possibly join a Saudi league? You know what I mean? If you want to get into human rights thing, like, they're terrible people, I agree, but they are really bad when it comes to women. Like, that's just atrocious. So you're going to go play golf for them and let them puppet you around for a payday? Like, to me, that just, you have no self-respect as a woman if you decide to make that leap. I mean, and that's fine. If you want to come out and say, I just did it for the money, like I said, but from day one with LIV, and the golfers came out and said, like, listen, man, it's a fat payday. I know these guys are a bunch of asshats, but I like money, so I'm leaving. I respect that. You know what I mean? Fine. I get it. You know what I mean? But don't, no woman can come out on a high horse saying, well, you know, the Saudis and this and this. No, they are deplorable human beings when it comes to women. And no self-respecting woman would go play in a LIV Saudi league. Like, no, not at all.
Yeah. And my only point was, I think there are people, women on the LPGA tour who would have the same mindset as the guys on the PGA tour who left, is all I'm saying. So, like, my point was only say that if LIV, I mean, I don't think LIV care. I don't, obviously, LIV men's tour doesn't make any sense. I don't think the Saudis are even worried about making sense. I think at this point, it's all just like, how can I be disruptive? And if, you know, I'm just going to use Daniel Kang as an example. I'm not saying she would, but I'm just saying if you go to somebody like a Daniel Kang and say, here's $100 million to play golf less and be with your family more, there are people on the LPGA Tour who absolutely will take that money, I think, in my opinion. Yeah. There will be. And so, again, I don't know if there's going to be no names or big names, but I think it would happen. And if they do get a couple big names, then, you know, what's going to happen, like, tragically, is exactly what you're saying, is, like, they're already struggled to get viewership. And if you lose a Nelly Korda or a Daniel Kang or a couple of the big names that are known, then you really, like, knock the feet out from under that league. Again, I'm not saying it will happen, but I just would not be surprised if LIV could offer enough money, and there are certain people whose mindset is like, that's a generational changing wealth for me. I'm going to take that and just call it a day. That's what I was getting at.
But I agree with everything you're saying. I do think there are people that would take the money, but you know, you can't say you're doing it to grow the game then. So why are you going to cut the legs out underneath the LPGA 2, who is finally on a good trajectory and finally getting all the views and finally getting all these things? Now you're going to cut the legs out from underneath them to say you're growing the game? No, you're not. You're not. There's no, that you're not doing that. You're doing it for money and you're doing it to disrupt shit. And it's not for golf. And that's ultimately been my problem for LIV, is like, it has never been for golf. It has never been to grow the game. Now, do I think, as a result, it has pushed the PGA Tour to do better things? Yes, but I don't think that was their plan. I don't think their plan was like, oh, we're going to go do this because we're really going to launch the PGA Tour up in the air. Like, guarantee you that was the complete opposite of their plan. You know, so I'm sure there'll be people that take the money. And if someone like Nelly, actually, I think it'd be interesting to see somebody like Michelle Wee going over there.
Yeah.
I'm not saying she would take money, but she comes out of retirement. She wanted to spend time with her family. She had a bunch of injuries. Never really lived up to her potential, in my opinion. No disrespect, she had a hell of a career and she's a phenomenal golfer. You just, with everything, remember when she was so young and she first came out, you would have thought she was like the next Annika, and she just did not live up to that. Still amazing, not shitting on Michelle here. No. But I think, you know, you could probably pull her out of retirement for it. That would be huge. But for sure. The same time, I don't know. I don't think they should do it. I mean, I don't think they should have done it to begin with, though. So,
I don't think they're too concerned about our opinions of it. I just think it'll happen at some point. At least it'll attempt to happen.
I think they'll attempt it. I'm just hoping LIV drowns before that happens. Because if you can't get the people to watch the men, you're not going to get people to watch the women. That is just not going to happen. And you're purely doing it just to disrupt golf and start shit. And at that point, it's just offensive. And I don't think anybody should support that, especially if you love golf and you love the game. You are, by participating in the whole live thing, you are basically participating in disrupting the PGA Tour and the LPGA Tour, which I will stand by them and all their flaws before I stand by live.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Just how I feel about it, though. But all right.
Well, if you've stayed with us this far, you have got, you have heard our, out of seven episodes, our seventh rant on live golf so far.
And there'll be more to come. I never root for anybody to fail, but yeah, let's go.
That's so funny.
So we have the Dell Match Play coming up. Interesting field because, in my opinion, you have people, you have some big names that could get knocked out real quick. And just looking at the bracket real quick, you know, you have Scheffler, Tom Kim, Norin, and Riley in the same group. Scheffler's on a heater. I don't think he'll get beat, but anything can happen in match play. And that's what makes match play so much fun.
Yeah.
Tom Kim, hell of a match play player. And Alex Norin, phenomenal match play player. Yeah. In theory, you could have Scheffler knocked out the first round. That'd be crazy to see. Right. There's another bracket in here. Oh, the Morikawa, doing Dave Svensson, and Victor Perez.
Go ahead. Yeah. So, no, I was just going to say, Scheffler is going against Davis Riley in the first round. Right?
Oh, he is? Okay.
Yeah. So, I think they're playing – they're in group one, but they – I don't know how this does it because it says Scheffler tees off at 250 and Tom Kim tees off at 301, even though they're in group one. So whatever the hell that means. It must just be a round robin kind of thing.
Yeah, I think so. And then,
go on. Sorry.
You know, we have another group here. We have Morikawa, Jason Day, Svensson, and Victor Perez. Perez is a hell of a match play player. Jay Day has been playing with Morikawa. I mean, you could have a part of me wants to take Victor Perez in that bracket. I'm not going to lie.
Interesting.
Dude is nasty when it comes to match play.
Yeah, no, he's great, for sure.
You have Rahm and Fowler going at it right out the gate. And I think Fowler has to do like 10th or better to go back to the Masters. Ugh, he's in a tough spot. There's another one that I found really, really – oh, here's another one. We have McIlroy, Keegan Bradley, Denny McCarthy, and Scott Stallings in the same group. McIlroy – good match play player, but he's been kind of wishy-washy lately. But he did go to – oh, real quick before getting in further into this. Whoever did the post, so McIlroy is making some crazy gear changes. Stay tuned. It's shocking. You're an idiot. He went to a half-inch shorter driver and put a Scotty Cameron putter in his bag. It's not that exciting.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, is he going to put a Titleist driver in the bag? So many possibilities. He went a half-inch shorter on it. But apparently he's driving the ball beautifully. He was spotted at Augusta, and they said – you know, if you're worried about Rory's driving, you don't need to anymore since he went to the shorter driver. So that's exciting. It gets me excited for him at Augusta because I have like 2 years left on $100.
I also love how, like, again, I know that we can talk about how TaylorMade's kind of had some bad luck with the driver the last couple days or weeks. Yeah. But, like, having said that, and I'm not to defend TaylorMade necessarily, but it more to defend Rory more than TaylorMade is, like, it was one bad drive, and everybody's making this like huge stink about how like, well, there's something wrong with Rory's driver, or let's talk about all of like the equipment things. And I just don't necessarily know if like a couple bad drives warrants that having, you know, I mean, again, I think you can make a play for maybe, you know, like TaylorMade needing to rebound from a PR perspective. But I think it was kind of silly for people to think like, he's going to put a different driver in the bag or that he's like having trouble driving the ball. It was just, you know, I mean, like, it's like give a guy a break. You're allowed to have a bad week driving the golf ball.
No, for sure. I think the thing with it is, though, with the whole bad PR for TaylorMade on this was, you know, you have Tiger out there. He's playing the OG stealth. Morikawa went back to the original sim.
Yeah.
McIlroy, he was bouncing back and forth, and it almost seemed like he wants to be in his old stealth, but he can't.
Yeah.
I don't know what his contract is. I'm not saying that's the case. I don't know. But from all the conversations around it, it seemed like he didn't want to be in the stealth too. He wanted to be in the original stealth.
Right.
So, you know, other than Scheffler, but Scheffler could hit a piece of wood down the middle right now. It doesn't freaking matter what he plays.
I love that.
Just right now, the stealth two is not – as seemingly not doing anyone any favors.
Right.
You know what I mean? And even after personally hitting it, I prefer the original Stealth over it myself, but I'm not Rory. I'm not any of these guys. But,
me too.
You know, I might call it a little bit of buyer's remorse or something like that, but it just seemed like Rory was aggravated. And I think TaylorMade probably just sat in a room with him and just did everything they could to make the Stealth 2 work. I don't know. I wasn't there for it. But yeah.
No, I know. And you know what I'm really surprised by? And I agree with you. And we talked about this last week with all of our gear stuff. And I do think the original Stealth is actually better than the Stealth 2. And that's besides the point. I'm always surprised at that level when manufacturer and like player cannot get together before it gets to a point where they have to make a comment about it in a presser or a tweet or something like that. You know, the Bryson had that whole thing with Cobra, and now this Rory thing, which is much less severe. But it's just like, I don't understand. Even if the Stealth 2 driver maybe isn't the best from like a consumer standpoint, you have to believe that they, like, with all of the testing and all of the time they've had before we get it as a buyer, or even like you and I get it as content testers, which is before the general public, but well beyond when Rory's had a chance to hit it. Like how you couldn't get dialed in by then just boggles my, it blows my mind. It's the same thing with like Tiger Woods in the shoe. Like, dude has a car accident and doesn't play golf for a year, and then is in a FootJoy shoe, like, and is still in a FootJoy shoe a year later after the Masters like explosion. Like, you're telling me Nike couldn't go out and get that shoe and cut it open and make a replica of it and throw a Nike swoosh on it or something? Like, how are manufacturers not able to get these top dudes dialed in? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's one thing if it's like 150th on the money list, but how do you not get McIlroy dialed in, or how do you not get Woods into the right shoe, or these big names that are repping your brand? Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I was just getting like a little animated about it, because it just boggles my mind that you can't get these guys dialed in.
I think you got to keep in mind, though, at least from my perspective, that golfers and being one, and we can be really, really finicky. It can be just the littlest thing that we don't like, and then that's it. Like, you're looking over that driver going, screw this. You know what I mean? Like, so, you know, I think it's I see both sides of it. Yeah. I think the golfer should be allowed to be honest about the equipment, and they shouldn't have to be a PR guy for the brand. No. Even though that's probably in their contract. Then again, all these guys are so good and they can hit anything all the time, though. But at that level, like, every millimeter counts. Everything counts for these guys. And all it takes is having a bad round with the driver, with the new driver that they put you in, to go, I'm going back to the driver I know I was hitting well.
Right.
And now you're standing over the driver going, I don't really want to be playing this. I haven't been hitting it well. You know, and it's in your head that you want to be playing your old driver and all these things. You know, you're right. They should be able to get them dialed in. Like, why didn't you sit down with them for 3 days and find them the perfect, or hell, just spray paint a Stealth and make it look like a Stealth freaking too. I don't know. Like, there are solutions to this problem, but I don't know. Like, you feel like they should be able to get them dialed in, but then again, I don't know. I think it's also unfair to some of these manufacturers always expect these guys to be playing the latest gear, because I mean, like, someone like Tiger gives a free pass. Tiger says go. He doesn't need anyone. He can break a contract. Does not matter, you know, but, you know, I think if you, it says more if you're playing a previous generation and you go on a tear winning tournaments than going out there with all the newest equipment and looking cool and not winning anything.
Right.
You know what I mean? So,
yeah,
that's like my take on that.
Yeah. And I don't just necessarily disagree with you. We know there's like, you know, there's more golf gear free agents now than there ever have been. I think we're like one of those guys, like, great. And I'm not necessarily saying like Rory and or TaylorMade is 100% in the wrong, or that really anybody is in the wrong. I think it's exactly what you're saying. Like, he had a bad round with it, lost confidence. And then there was a little bit of like, you know, headbutting over, can I play this? Can I just feel good in it? And they're like, well, we pay you $200 million to swing a Stealth 2. Like, I need you to swing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Totally agree.
So I just think, I mean, it's got to be, I'm sure, frustrating for both. I just know that if I was TaylorMade, Like, I would have been on the range with him after that round being like, what do you want? What do we need to do? Like, let's get Trotty in here. Yeah. You know, like, we'll test. Here's 1,000 heads. Can you, you know, like, what do we need to do to get you kind of feeling comfortable again? And maybe they did that and it just didn't work. But, man, I'm just always surprised when there's such a gear issue that it becomes like a talking point and it doesn't. You know, I'm sure there it happens, but it gets worked out. So I'm always just interested. You know, there's the whole thing with him using Titleist wedges a few weeks ago.
They are better than TaylorMade wedges. And he's getting the GT. Apparently, TaylorMade does have a bunch of GTs in the truck trying to get Rory into one of them. But he went back to a custom Scotty, and he has that same label on it like JT does and everything like that too. Yeah. Which, you know, I think once you're such a caliber golfer, you want them to win tournaments more than play your stuff. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's just, at least that's my perspective on it. I want you to win tournaments. That does more for a brand. You have the bag that says TaylorMade, and you're playing TaylorMade irons, all these things, TaylorMade fairway woods.
No, yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's right. A good issue. I would really like to be in the ropes so I could get a better understanding, because it's all so much speculation, and it's all, hey, here's an argument for this, here's an argument for that, but like, we don't actually have a clue.
Right. And to more my point is just like, well, even what you're saying, you know, like, okay, Titleist wedges are better, totally fine. And I can, you know, I can get behind that argument. But for a guy like Rory, to me, you shouldn't even get to the place where he's seen playing Titleist wedges. Just make him a TaylorMade wedge that, you know, like, is exactly formed like a Titleist wedge. And just, like you said, like, spray paint the goddamn TaylorMade logo on it. I, you know, like, file down a Vokey and just, I'm just joking, kind of. But like, I'm just saying, for that top level player, you should be able to get him grinded in, you know, like, with as much customization as they can do. I'm not saying you or I, but just for that top level player, man, it's just hard for me to see how you can't get it done. But I get it.
You got to keep in mind, they probably have patents on certain technologies and certain things. So you can get as close as you want, but it'll never be the same.
No, yeah. You know what I
mean? Yeah. All right, so back to the match play real quick. Whew. Yeah, we got way off topic.
Tangents.
So, yeah, you had some guys that get knocked out pretty quick. I mean, you know, you have Billy Ho, Keith Mitchell, Ricky Fowler, John Rahm in the first group. You like to think John Rahm's going to go out there and tear it up, but Ricky can play good match play. Keith Mitchell's been in a bit of a heater. Billy Ho, you never know what the hell he's going to show up with, so there's that. You have McIlroy, Bradley, McCarthy, and Stallings. I like to think McIlroy is going to make it out of that bracket safely, but you never know. McCarthy can string birdies together like a mother. Bradley is a match play freaking monster, and he's trying to make the Ryder Cup team, so he's going to be dangerous. Scott Stallings, I don't know how he is as a match play player. I like him. I don't know how he handles that. And then you have Xander Schauffele, Hoag, Wise, and Cameron Davis in the same group. I mean, that could be – Davis could go out there. He's a big hitter. He could light it up.
Hoagie, man.
He's on the heater lately, too. Yeah. You have Fitzpatrick, Tigala, Minwoo, and J.J. Spawn. I don't see Spawn making it out of that one. But Minwoo can tear it up. Tigala can, and so can Fitzpatrick. So there's a lot of – you know, there's a good possibility. You're going to see some names you want on TV, not on TV after the first or second day. Well, you know, you have Spieth, Lowry, Montgomery, Mackenzie Hughes. You know, that's Homa, Matsuyama, Kisner, and John Suh, that will be really good.
Kisner's such a good match play player. He's unbelievable.
Do you see he went to left-hand low with his chipping?
I didn't, but it doesn't surprise me. And, I mean, if there's any tournament I like Kisner for, it's this one.
Every time. Good. But you have John Suh, who's been playing really good golf. You have Hideki, who's amazing. And Homa as well. So that's another one. It's really hard to pick a name out of it. You want to say Kiss because Bulldog, you know what I mean? Then you have Homa, though, who could do anything. I mean, these are pretty stacked, you know what I mean? You have Sam Burns, Seamus Power, Adam Scott. Yeah, Adam Hadwin, that's a complicated one. Cantlay, Harmon, Cage, Lee, Nick Taylor. Cantlay hasn't had his best stuff this year, so who knows? Actually, I like Harmon a lot.
As high as he is, yeah.
He's been going through equipment testing. I think that is all screwed up in his head right now. Morikawa, J-Day, Vincent Perez, that's going to be a good one. Hovland, Chris Kirk, Siwoo. I love Siwoo in match play. I freaking love that guy. And then Cooch. Cooch has been playing sneaky good. I just spit everywhere. Cooch has been playing sneaky good golf lately.
Yeah, he has.
Sungjae Im, Fleetwood, Poston, and McNeely. I don't know. I like to say Fleetwood's going to come out on top on that one.
He's been playing good too, so it's hard to root against him.
Finau Kiriyama, Bezenduit. I love Bezenduit and Maronk. I don't know much about Maronk. Kiriyama playing Finau is a good match play guy.
Bezenduit could take that bracket for sure.
Oh, yeah. 100%. I love Bezenduit. Hatton, Henley, Herbert, or Herbert, and Griffin. Actually, I really like Lucas in that one, or Hatton. Henley can get on a heater, though, at any time. Zalatoris, Ryan Fox, Harris English, and Andrew Putnam. That'll be a good one.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah. And then Cameron Young, Sepp Straka, Corey Connors, and I think it's David Thompson. Sepp Straka. I love Sepp Straka. He's one of my favorite guys on tour. I love him. Cameron Young is turning into one of my favorites. Corey Connors, always solid. There was a name here, though. Sepp Straka, I really like him in match play. I think he'll come out on top in that bracket.
Yeah, that'll be interesting for sure. It's just, I mean, match play is just such a, I don't want to say like a any man's game, although it is, but it's just different. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a different game.
You get hot for four holes. It's a totally different game. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, you don't know. So I can't wait to watch. I love the match plays. Super interesting. Brackets. It's like our own little March Madness and golf kind of thing.
I'm excited
for it. If I had to pick a winner,
It's 5 days.
That too, yeah. If I had to pick a winner, I mean, I don't know. Because, I mean, you got to think KISS is going to end up plowing through some people. But here's a really interesting Scheffler, defending champion here. He was defending the champion of Waste Management.
Yeah.
He's playing a golf course that he grew up playing. Man, it's hard not to pick him. Hard not to pick him. Yeah. And if he did, he came back and he won this, defended two titles in the same year and the Players, and going into the Masters, holy shit, golf got interesting for Augusta. I mean, it already is interesting.
Yeah.
Even more interesting, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I would love to see a Scheffler-Rahm duel the last day.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I mean, that would be sweet. Yeah. I'd love to see like a Kiz-Rahm duel, just like the dichotomy of here's this short hitter who like talks a lot of trash, and here's this like quiet giant, and they're like battling it out. I mean, like, you're just never gonna see like a Rahm Kisner or a McIlroy Kisner like fight duel, really, except unless it's this. I mean, I love Scottie Scheffler. I'd love to see Tom Kim play, upset him there. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to go Kisner just because I love Kiz. And if there's one more thing to pick him for this year, it's got to be this.
I'm going to go on a limb and say Tom Kim, man. It fits his energy well. It fits his style well. I feel like this lines up well with what he does, what he likes to do. And he feeds off the crowd and the energy. And you know he'll get the crowd into it as well, which brings an interesting because a lot of these guys don't do that. Kim is not afraid to use the crowd as leverage. And I love that. Golf needs more of that. So,
no, I totally agree. I think, I know they're in the same bracket, but I think Tom Kim, Kevin Kisner semifinal would be a ton of fun from that side of the bracket.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll see.
Oh, yeah. I would love to see it to be a foreign guy, an American guy, just because we're in the year of a Ryder Cup. So something like Scheffler and Rahm would be really cool because we're going to see that again. We're going to see it again. So I want that to go down so we can see it at the Ryder Cup and go, oh, round two. Let's do this, By the way, if you did not know already, I effing love the Ryder Cup. It is my favorite thing in the entire world. That moment between Reed and McIlroy, that match, like if that does not get your blood pumping, just such a great event. And I think the fields are very, very level. You know what I mean? It doesn't seem like one is leaning more than the other. So the match play, it's going to be important to watch it to see what potential matches you might be seeing in a few months.
Right.
And if there's going to be some vengeance and a little bit more blood on the line come Ryder Cup. So and also maybe some bad taste in the mouth going back into the President's Cup next year too. Like it's cool. It's fun. It adds an element of drama to the game that I don't think we get enough of.
Yeah, and I can't. I love that it starts tomorrow. Yeah, it starts tomorrow. It'll be fun.
Yeah, it does. Shoot. I haven't done any brackets. I might try to do that before I go to sleep.
5 days, baby.
Let's do it.
I think it's the only tournament left. Great episode. What's that?
Yes. Yes, it is. I'll say that was a great episode. I think we did a good job.
We did great.
Very proud of us.
Yes, we did great. Hope you guys enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed it. We always enjoy it. So even if you didn't, you know that we are having a good time regardless. But
for the record, we only come in here with like 25 minutes of material, and then somehow it always ends up an hour 15. It is quite amazing.
Yeah.
There's some days we're like, okay, we're talking about these three things. And the next thing I was like, oh gosh, it's been an hour.
Yeah. I think it's just fun to talk about. Yeah. I mean, I think we can just make anything last. And, you know, regardless if people are hanging on to the end, we are hanging on to the end because we enjoy talking about it. So, all right. The end of episode 7. Thank you guys so much. Remember, like, comment, subscribe, Instagram, YouTube, Spotify, Parnon Pod. I'm Ryan Hernandez Golf on Instagram. He's PGR Scratch Golf on Instagram. We love you guys. We'll see you guys next week. Peace.
Deuces.
Oh, gosh.